Welcome to the Sales Readiness Podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Sales Readiness Group, an industry-leading sales training company that helps companies develop highly effective sales organizations. For more information, visit us at salesreadinessgroup.com. This audio track features Norman Bihar and Ray Makla on episode 21 through 24 from our Q&A video series, SRG Insights, where we answer your questions about sales, sales management, and sales training. In this audio track, we discuss what to do when your manager doesn't let you manage, attitudes that set top salespeople apart, how to get past the gatekeeper, and how to improve your hiring success rate. Enjoy.
I am a new manager with a successful sales background. My manager often gives me good advice on how to get my team to respect me. Lately, I've noticed my manager stepping in on situations that I should be handling and not letting me take control. How do I approach this conversation?
So first, let me congratulate you on the move from sales to sales management. It sounds like it's a good career move for you. And obviously, managing a team is a different skill set than actually selling. So when you manage a team, you have to be able to manage performance, provide coaching, provide leadership, and provide motivation. And it sounds like your manager is giving you some pretty good advice as a new manager in terms of how you earn your team's respect and probably in some other areas as well. But I also sense in the question a little bit of a frustration that your manager is starting to take over and really doing things that you should be doing as a manager. So first, let me share with you that that's really not uncommon. You know, it's possible your manager really likes being hands-on and maybe can't even resist the temptation, maybe not even know necessarily that they're taking over for you as opposed to empowering you. So I think the first thing to do is to maybe schedule some one-on-one time with your manager. And, you know, it doesn't have to be overly formal, but it should be like at least something over coffee, not just a hallway conversation. And maybe spend about 15 minutes and find out from your manager how they think you're doing. Let them know that you appreciate the advice that they're providing. And then once you get some feedback, let's say you're getting positive feedback. So, you know, one of the things that I've noticed is there are situations coming up that you sometimes jump in on. I really appreciate that. But it would be better if you let me try and handle those. This way I could learn and then maybe you could debrief with me later. But your manager may also have some concerns, and maybe they're jumping in because they have concerns but just haven't expressed them yet. In that case, really listen attentively, maybe take a few notes. Then let them know, hey, I really appreciate and understand your concerns, but for me to grow and learn, I need to be able to handle those situations. So maybe I can try and handle those personally the next few times. You can kind of observe what I'm doing and then provide me some feedback. In other words, it shouldn't be confrontational. Your manager, it sounds like, has your interests in mind. They're giving you some good advice. But for whatever reason, they can't resist the temptation to manage directly as opposed to manage through you. But for ultimately for your growth and development and for your manager to get the leverage and really get the return on investment from you as a manager, it's important for both of you that you learn to manage and develop your team. So again, my advice is have a candid conversation with your manager. Keep it neutral. It doesn't have to be that you're offended or upset. Just kind of find out what's going on, what you're doing well, where your areas for improvement are, and really express that you can learn best by being put in those situations, much like a salesperson ultimately has to do the selling and coaching from their manager. In this case, you want your manager to coach the coach, and you'll become a more effective sales manager over time. And from based on your question, you have a better relationship and more productive relationship with your own manager. Hope that helps and thank you.
Paul O'Connell asks, what are the attitudes that help the most successful salespeople excel? Core sales skills seems to be a reasonably well understood part of sales professionals' grounding. I'm curious about what brings those skills to life with best effect. In particular, what are the key attitudes you see that set the most successful salespeople apart?
So that's a really great question because I think your question really zeroes in on the distinction between selling skills and what we call personal qualities. And it reminds me of a blog post that I wrote many years ago that really got to the distinction between what we call the science of selling, which has to do with selling skills, and the art of selling, which has to do with personal qualities. And when you can combine those two and you have people that are really proficient at selling skills and people who are really good in terms of the personal qualities they possess, it's those personal qualities that bring those skills to life. So just for a minute, just talking about skills, when we're talking about selling skills, we're talking about areas like prospecting for new business, call planning, call research going into a call, identifying needs through great questioning and active listening skills, being able to present solutions, manage objections, negotiate, those would all be in the area of selling skills, and those are all skills that can be learned and perfected over time. Personal qualities are very different because by the time someone enters the workforce, most of their personal qualities are formed. But here's what we've found to be some of the most important personal qualities for great sales professionals. Number one, the person really needs to come across as authentic. You can kind of tell when someone's very genuine and someone's coming across in a very contrived way. So you want people that are genuine in terms of their attitudes and beliefs because it's that authenticity that builds trust with the customer. Salespeople need to be determined. It's often referred to today as grit, but it really gets to perseverance. Is that salesperson competitive? Do they want to win? Are they willing to work as hard as they need to and really put forth the effort to go out and secure business? The third area is really about optimism. We want salespeople who are really positive, salespeople that are resilient, because in sales, you're going to get a lot more no's and yeses. But it's that sales professional that's always optimistic, that has a positive attitude, and that attitude can be contagious both with their customers, so that they're enjoyable to work with, their coworkers, and obviously their manager. Great salespeople are naturally inquisitive, so they're asking great questions, they're listening, they're probing for needs, all in a way that comes across as very conversational. So they're great conversationalists who are really listening to understand the customer's needs. And then another attribute I would mention is creativity. You know, the best sales professional are able to internalize what they've heard in terms of the customer's needs and then come up with creative solutions that uniquely address the customer's needs. So just quickly to recap, some of the personal qualities that I think are really important are authenticity, determination, optimism, inquisitiveness, and creativity. And I think if you look for these as you go out to hire your sales professionals, particularly people who already have good selling skills, you'll find that those selling skills coupled with these personal qualities will make for very successful sales professionals.
Ankur, CEO of IO Funnel, asks, often after dropping an email or LinkedIn message, we try to follow up with the decision maker by phone. In most cases, we're greeted by a gatekeeper who politely asks us to drop the decision maker an email. We rarely get a response. How would you suggest getting past the gatekeeper to talk to the decision maker?
Well, thank you for that question. And, you know, it's one I specifically appreciate because I think we've all run into it in the past. Gatekeepers have gotten very good at their job, which is protecting that key decision maker from the vendors and the partners and the salespeople who are calling on them every day. So, of course, they're going to say, send us some more information or shoot us an email. I'll make sure it gets to him or her. And I think once we're in that position, we've lost control of the conversation. So, you know, there are a lot of suggestions out there that say, well, we should make sure we're in the driver's seat, you know, call them by first name. We should be presumptuous and call in as if we've already got the appointment, as if, of course, they're going to take our phone call. The problem is, I think most gatekeepers know all of those tactics, all of those drills. And in fact, we probably had them performed on us. And oftentimes they're pretty irritating to have somebody call us by first name or assume that we're just going to take the call. So I'd like to rethink that a little bit. And this goes to the compelling reason that decision maker wants to talk to you. And unless we've thought that through and we really have that in our mind before we call, I don't think we should expect that phone call to go through or for them to actually respond to our email or our voice message. So some of the things we might do to make that compelling case and create that interest is to provide a gift of content in advance. So maybe we've sent an article or a white paper and we're calling to follow up on that. I especially like the idea of sending them a letter, and maybe that's a handwritten note, or maybe that's a copy of an article with our note on top, so that when we're calling, we're saying, I'm following up on the letter I sent on September 15th that he should have received 2 days ago. Now, that's a much more compelling and much more interesting way of capturing the interest. I think also an invitation. So I'm following up on the invitation that I sent on September 15th. I'd like to see if Tom is interested in responding or being part of this executive-only session that we're holding. If you have a article or a book that you've published, being able to send that in advance and then follow up, I think, is another great way of getting their attention. So again, we're putting it in a context that the gatekeeper can't necessarily say no, because that information's already out there. they're going to be hopefully thinking to themselves, wow, is my boss, my decision maker, going to be upset if they don't get this information or if they don't get this request? This is so compelling that they probably want to take the phone call or at least be put through to have that conversation. So again, I think beyond some of those tips and tricks we may have heard in the past, we need to think hard about what's going to be compelling, what piece of interesting information or invite or intro can we make that's going to cause that person to take notice, to think about that opportunity, and to give us that opportunity for us to have the conversation, put the voicemail or the call through, and actually have a conversation with that person to see what's so interesting or what it is that we can provide. So those are some of the thoughts on how we get past that gatekeeper. They say just send an email. If we do that, realize you've lost control of the conversation. They're probably not going to respond. Let's give them a reason. Let's give them that compelling reason for them to actually want to take your call and return the message.
Marianne Scott, MBA, asks, with today's business landscape constantly changing, for example, new products, competition, changing workforce, boomers retiring, millennials moving up, and pressures to achieve sales targets, company goals, how do you make more informed, confident hiring decisions?
Well, that's a really great question, and one that's really insightful in terms of how important that is to the organization. One that we see that the cost of a bad sales hire can really be exponential in terms of the impact on the organization. Not only is that the cost of hiring, training, recruiting, bringing that person up to speed, but you also have the time it takes them to really hit their stride or become productive. And if they don't work out, the time that that territory is going underserviced or underutilized. So it really is a costly and an important decision. And one, unfortunately, I don't think we pay enough attention to in terms of what we're looking for. So in terms of asking that question, how do we improve our success of hiring? I think it really starts with the first question of asking, what does a successful rep look like in our organization? This idea of a top performer analysis, I think, is really important, where we look at first identifying what the group of top performers are. That's not just who's meeting their quota, but who's really demonstrating those behaviors that we're looking for in the organization. Who's got the best win rates? Who's got the best cycle times? Who's really improving the opportunities to expand the accounts? So we want to look at a number of different factors, identify who those top performers are, and then really look at the personal qualities that they're demonstrating in the organization and their experience and attributes that they bring that are making them successful. I think in this way, we can build the profile of an ideal candidate that's much different than just saying, well, hire somebody who looks like that person or hire somebody like the sales manager or the sales VP. Because as we know, without criteria and a little more rigor applied to the process, we tend to hire people that look like ourselves, and that isn't necessarily the best approach. So I would really, once we've done that top performer analysis, want to break that down into an ideal profile. And this is more than a typical just recruiting job description. It's going to look at the experience, the skills, and the knowledge, but it is also going to look at those personal behaviors and those attributes that we want to see demonstrated in the candidate. Once we've built that profile, we can screen for it, and then using behavioral-based interviewing questions, that's going to be the best way we can see if the person has actually demonstrated those qualities in the past. So we take a STAR interviewing technique, situation, task, action, and result, as a way of asking questions to get underneath the surface, get to those underlying behaviors, and see if they've really demonstrated those things in the past. So for instance, we may decide that integrity is really important. Well, let's ask a question that gets to a situation where they had to demonstrate their integrity. Perhaps it was a situation where their boss put them in an uncomfortable situation where they had to go against their ethics. What did they do? How did they respond to that? Let's understand the situation. Let's understand the actions that they took and the results that came out of that and how they responded and what the end result was. So I'm a fan of the idea of looking for passion and perseverance. It's one of the things that's being referred to as grit these days. So let's find out, where do they demonstrate passion in the past? It may be on a project, that may be in their education, that may be on their job, but where did they really demonstrate that? What was the situation? What were the tasks, actions, and results? Or where did they have to persevere and overcome adversity, and how did they demonstrate that? I think by asking these types of behavioral-based interviewing questions, we can really get a better idea of the full picture of the candidate see if they've demonstrated those attributes in the past, and they're more likely to really demonstrate those in the future. I think one of the key questions we should be asking in any interviewing and hiring situation is this person really a fit for the team and the organization? Because I think that is as much an indicator of whether they're going to be successful as some of the other attributes, such as their education and their experience and background. So again, we want to look for those top performers, see what they're doing. We want to build that ideal profile. And ultimately, we want to build those behavioral-based interviewing questions that help us identify if they've demonstrated those attributes in the past. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you found this content helpful, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and share this track with your network. Also, our new book, The High Impact Sales Manager, a no-nonsense practical guide to improve your team sales performance, is now available to order. To learn more and buy a copy, go to highimpactsalesmanager.com. Thanks again for listening, and remember, better skills produce better results.